the end of Sedrabracious, Torah tells us as follows: Vayishalech Chanuch Esor Elokim Ve'enenu Ki Lochach Oso Elokim. Actually, I could have said it differently, but in any event, that Chanuch walked with God, so to speak, and he is no longer because God took him. And there are various interpretations that have been given of that pasuk. I saw one recently from Harav Chaim Elozer Vax, very, very brief vort, and he reads the pasuk as follows: Vayishalech Chanuch Esor Elokim. Yes, indeed it is true that Chanuch was a tzaddik, and that he walked with God, so to speak. But he walked with God to the exclusion of walking with his fellow man, that he concentrated all his efforts and all his energies, which is laudable, on his relationship with God, but did not concern himself with his fellow man. So then the pasuk tells us, ve'enenu. And as a result of the fact that everything was turned upward totally, and nothing was horizontal, so to speak, to his fellow man, to help his fellow man, he left no trace, so to speak. We know nothing about Chanuch. He left no monuments to himself. He made no impact on his society, the society in which he lived. And I bring that notion by way of contrast to our visiting Magid Shir, so to speak, to Rabbi Mordechai Willig, who, in exact antithesis of that, who is making his marks. Of course, he's hishalech, mishalech in Hashem. But in addition to that, he's making his impact on the Jewish community, both in the Kehillah, the Young Israel of Riverdale, and also on young Jewish men and women, where he's Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University and his activities at Morasha. Just the opposite. His theme, we are very, very pleased that Rabbi Willig has joined us this year. His theme for this three-part series is Men, Women, and Tznius. My honor to present Rabbi Mordechai Willig.
Thank you very much for your kind words of introduction. It's a pleasure to be addressing you here this evening. The chairman omitted this one fact, which I would like to introduce biographically, is that I am from Queens. I'm happy to present my father, Shalita, who is here, who moved to Queens in the 1950s, when some of the veteran members of the Queens Jewish Center were pioneering here in Forest Hills. And when I was a lad in the wilderness of the then wilderness of Kew Garden Hills, we had a walk on Shabbos to this shul, where there was some kind of activities which were taking place. Things develop as years go by, but I have fond memories as a child walking here, and it's a pleasure to return to share some Divrei Torah with you this evening, and in two subsequent evenings, on a very significant and important theme in Halacha. Now, the general theme of men, women, and tznius is of course a transcendental one which has no time bounds or place bounds. And as a matter of fact, in the tradition of speaking on the parasha briefly as the chairman, let me go even further back than you did, to the very beginning of time, where we are taught Pru Ruvu Duvas V'chivshua V'chivshua, so Rashi comments V'chivsha. This means two things: Darko shel ish lelech achar isha, which is dating. That's part of today's topic. But it also says that a woman should not be what we call a yatz anis, an outgoing individual. I'd like to begin by giving a general introduction into the concept of tznius, and to explain to you that in fact it is not particular, it's not limited to when one is dating or one is in business or one is a problem of yichud, but it's a much more all-encompassing idea. We know that tznius is something which belongs to the wise. And we are taught v'yas tznuim chochma, that individuals who are tznua are individuals who are wise. And the question is, what does it mean? We are also taught that this is something which is required of us, of all humanity. not only women, but also men, not only Jews, but also non-Jews, the whole world is required to fulfill the Atznei Alecha Semelokech, to be modest in one's walking before God. By Yitzhalech Chanoch, walking before God, how should one walk before God in a manner which bespeaks tzniyus? And what does this mean, and from where do we derive it, and what does it mean, has an impact upon us? I'd like to describe it to you in terms of a very fascinating ma'amar, which the rabbis have taught us in, again, in this Chumash of Bereshis. We'll read it very soon, a few weeks hence, again this month, upcoming month. We'll read that Sarah, the matriarch, is described in the Bible as Hinei Bo'ohel, behold, she is in the tent. The angels ask Abraham, where is she? And that's the response. And Rashi adds two words. The two words that Rashi adds to explain what the word Bo'ohel means are Sinuahi, that our matriarch, our mother Sarah, Sarah Yemenu, was a tsunua, a modest woman. Some years back, I was a speaker at a panel and a discussion group which took place in Stern College, and one of the other speakers during that very memorable session was somewhat critical of our rabbis. It is generally a very dangerous thing to be. But her particular criticism was that she recalls the exact same expression of Ohel, of tent, is used to describe the grandson of our mother Sarah, of Sarah Imenu, namely Yaakov Avinu, Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim, still in the Sefer of Bereshis. The first verse is in Vayera, the second is in Toldos. And all of a sudden, the rabbis comment, what does it mean, Yoshev Ohalim? This refers to the yeshiva that Yaakov Avinu spent his time in the study hall of Shem and Aver. And this particular speaker was critical. Why did suddenly the rabbis change their tune? When it comes to Sarah, they say Ohel means tzinius. When it comes to Jacob, to Yaakov, they say it means a yeshiva, where he's studying Torah. And it was an interesting remark. We don't question the tradition of our rabbis. However, I'd like to comment that the two are not absolutely unrelated, as this questioner would have it. There is a distinct relationship between tznius and Torah. We already mentioned as tznuim chachma, the link between modesty and wisdom. But if it's true in wisdom in general, certainly it is true when we speak about the Jewish people and their Torah in particular. We find, once again, this idea of modesty. Modesty has two meanings. Modesty means privacy, and modesty means humility. Are you aware of that? The word, English word modesty has two meanings. I'm not going to discuss them a little bit later, what the connection might be. But we find, in terms of modesty in the sense of privacy, particular reference to the Jewish woman. The famous verse in Tehillim, Kol Kavuda Bas Melech Penima, that the honor of the Jewish woman is inward, within, which goes together with the idea of tznius in its more universal sense. And as I said before, in Micha, in the sixth chapter, we read about the idea of walking humbly before God. And in Mishle, the 11th chapter, we read that modesty is linked with wisdom. And therefore, once again, there are some individuals, especially certain feminists, who have come to criticize the pejorative, as they see it, of the linking of the Jewish woman to the inward, as if, you know, it's the man who has the right to go out and to make his mark, and the woman is left behind. She misses the boat. In rejoinder to this claim, one should study carefully the Medrash in the first chapter in Bamidbar, with this very same phrase of Kol Kavuda Bas Melech Penima, is used in reference to the greatest person who ever lived, man or woman. And that greatest person is none other than our master Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is described in the words of Bas Melech Penima, explaining to us that Hashem revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu day in and day out, not with great publicity, not with great fanfare, but rather be'ohel mo'ed, in the privacy of the tent. Once again, the expression tent, for the third time this evening. And that ohel mo'ed, that tent of meeting, where the divine presence would reveal itself to the greatest person who ever lived, is described by Medrash with the words, kol kavuda bas melech penima. In point of fact, the Medrash there says that was it. There was a tremendous revelation at Sinai, we all know about that one, and from then on everything was done privately. Rashi comments in the 34th chapter of Shemos on the verse Va'alei Elai Ha'ora, when God beckons to Moses, come with me to the mountain to receive the tablets, the luchos, for the second time. Rashi says there was an absolute privacy. Says Rashi, the first time it was a media event. Right? Just picture today the revelation. Some of you may have seen the Ten Commandments, right? So you know a little bit of a picture of what Hollywood would make of such a historic event, with the cameras rolling, and of course all the video people there with the lights, and you know, we can't even describe it in our senses, because Roam as Akolos, they could see sound and they could hear light, and it was just a multimedia event. I mean, it was just beyond anything we can even describe in our senses. And according to the rabbis, the whole world stopped. You may be familiar with certain midrashim, that the rivers stopped and the birds stopped. The whole world stopped. The whole world knew about Matan Torah. And Rashi says as follows. The Rishonos, the first tablets which are given, the kolos or the chuos, with great sound and great fanfare, sholta ben ayin hara. The evil eye grabbed hold of it. And they were therefore destroyed, as we know. Therefore, the second time around, Hashem says to Moses, come up. No one else is looking, just you and me on the mountain. Concludes Rashi, Ein lecha yofa min atznius. There's nothing greater than privacy. Now, you may ask, so then why did God do this in the beginning, right? So why did God give us the luchos the first time with such fanfare? Didn't he realize the danger of the ayin hara? The answer is given by Rambam, who tells us that revelation was and is to this day the cornerstone of our belief. We believe in God, we believe in Torah, not because of anything which we have seen other miracles confirm. Because Rambam tells us that there were all kinds of miracles, so much of a very unholy source. We believe in God because of the revelation at Sinai, which was witnessed by millions of people. And Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Sefer Kuzri makes the same point in a more argumentative fashion in his imagined debate with the king of the Kuzarian. And he said, you know, there's no other religion which claims this. Think about it for a minute. Christianity rests this entire claim on somebody walked on water. But who saw him walk on water? Two drunkards according to their own tradition, you know, we don't believe the whole thing, of course, but they say two guys maybe saw him walk on water. And Islam is based on that Muhammad went up, and who knows about it? Muhammad. And Muhammad tells us that he went up, but there's no one else who can confirm that. Why did they make up a tale? They should have said 600,000 people saw Jesus walk on water, or saw Muhammad coming down, you know, from the sky. Why didn't they make it up? So Rabbi Yehuda Halevi says, you can't make it up. It doesn't work. They probably tried it. It didn't work. People aren't that stupid. And therefore, the fact that we have this tradition, which is recorded in our history, both written and oral, and this is the fundamental basis of our faith, indicates that the Jewish faith is the correct faith. Well, this couldn't have been done if the first luchos, tablets, had been given up at the mountain. If we rely on one person, Moses, well, that wouldn't be that much different. I mean, of course it would be different. But for the outsider it would be different. They're relying on someone who says Muhammad saying that he was up in heaven. We needed it. We had to have it. But the downside was, boom, we're going to be broken. Because Ein Lecha Yochem Ein Atznius. Modesty, privacy is the best thing. The truth is that the word modesty has two meanings, as we mentioned. One is privacy, and one is humility. The two are related in the following sense. Privacy, indeed, reflects humility in thought. Being humble is really a matter of thought, what you think of yourself. Privacy is how you conduct yourself. And those two are really two sides of the same coin. And this is all related to the study of Torah. We mentioned at the beginning that the same word, Ohel, is used to mean all these three things. It means Sarah's modesty, it means Jacob's studiousness, and the same word is used to describe the place where God revealed himself to Moses. The Talmud tells us in Pesachim 66 that an individual who is conceited, who is arrogant, forgets his wisdom. As tznuim chachma. So that you see that humility is as much indispensable for the mastery of Torah as is privacy. These two elements, which are both two sides of the same coin, which are both used, both translated as modesty. So therefore, this is something which is not surprising, that everything is linked together. Therefore, just to review, we have the idea of modesty, of tznius, of privacy being a transcendental one which is not limited to women, not limited to Jews, not limited to anybody. It goes across the board. It goes back to the beginnings of time. And everyone is supposed to be as modest as possible, as private as possible. What is the need to go out? As there was in the original revelation, one has to do it and take the chance and pay the price, as the first luchos did by being broken. I know is not required. Ein lecha yochem in atznius. The best thing to do is to stay behind the curtain. We speak about dating. We have to understand that the very word dating is not exactly a word which goes back to the beginning of our history. The first marriage in Jewish life was arranged, right? As have many marriages since. And the first marriage in Jewish life was the marriage of our father Isaac, Yitzchak Avinu, to Rivka. And as the first, it's always the paradigm, the example for all those to follow. Doesn't mean you all have to follow exactly the same behavior pattern, but we would be well advised to learn certain important lessons from what went on, as the Torah describes at great, great length in the in-between parasha. We already spoke, made reference to Vayera and to Toldos, now we made reference to Chayesara in between. Interestingly, the Kli Yakar tells us that the entire theme of Eliezer's quest for a proper marriage partner was based upon tznius, upon modesty. That's not what we usually think. In fifth grade, or whenever we learn that portion, we are taught that the hallmark of Rebecca, of Rivka, was chesed, was kindness. After all, that's what it says, right? He's going to ask for water. What's she going to say? I'll give you water, and I'll give water to your camels. Oh, that's the woman. That's chesed. That's kindness. Nothing to do with modesty. But if you look a little bit more carefully, you'll see a deeper lesson. And the students in my yeshiva, in the yeshiva, hear this lesson every single year, year in and year out, when I speak to them about dating, which I do. I think it's very important that the Rebbeim speak to their students about these matters, just as well as speak to them about Hashol HaSapara, someone who's borrowing a cow, which is what tomorrow's opening their yeshiva is about. But down the road, we'll discuss these matters as well. They're probably more important in the long run. Kli Yakar points out the expression of Eliezer when he prays to God to find the right one is, quote, Hakrei no lefonai hayom. Hakrei means, it's in the shorish of mikre, of happenstance, of coincidence. May some kind of a crazy coincidence happen that I should be able to find the right one. Which means, I'm going to the well. Now the well was the equivalent today of what you might call the candy store. You know, it was the corner. Everyone came together and that's where the well was. Now we know that girls who hang out by the candy store are usually not the kinds that we're interested for our sons. So, but on the other hand, those are in the house, you can't find them. So how do you do it? You have to pray for a near miracle, for a coincidence. That the woman who's usually in the house should just this day, for some reason, end up by the well. Well, that's exactly what happened. His prayer was answered. Says the Kli Yakar, he got to the well, and he sees this fine-looking maiden named Rebecca. He didn't know what her name was. He didn't know who she was. And so the Torah tells us that she was a Bisula v'ish lo yida'ah. She was a virgin and nobody knew her. Literally, no one knew who she was. The Kliyaka says, why didn't anyone know who she was? She wasn't part of the gang. She didn't hang around over there. No one knew her. She was never there before. Because it was only a mikvah. It was her first time out. Something happened and she had to substitute for somebody else and bring the cattle to get their water. Proof, says Kliyaka. We all know, those of us who have dated, who have been at mixers, or even in general company, know that ordinarily, especially in a context of looking for a marriage partner, it's not considered proper protocol to walk over to a lady and say, who are you? That's almost never done. What you usually do is, if you're people can tell me if I'm right or wrong, that's how it was some years back, if you are at a mixer and you want to know who a certain young lady is, so what you do is you walk over to someone else. Who's that? You know, it doesn't sound, I don't know. So who's that? You go around the room and say, until someone tells you who that is. Well, says the Kli Yakar, who knew about protocol from his European propriety, he said, then Hakam Eliezer said, bas miyat. He violated all the rules. Emily Post would hang them up. You know what he says? He tried it. He asked everybody around, who is this? Nobody knew. That's it. Ish lo yada. Nobody knew who she was. See, he had no choice. He had to ask a bas miyat. So Kli Yakar is telling us a brand new outlook on this part of the Torah. That the primary attribute that he was looking for was in fact tzniyus. Truth of the matter is that tzniyus and chesed are also related. There's a relationship between someone who is a modest person, a private person, and someone who is a kind person. The Kli Yakar tells us about this as well. The Kli Yakar tells us, and this is very important for dating, we have to understand how to understand it. The Kli Yakar quotes a mamar of the Gemara in Tanis, Chavdaf Chavdalet, Kala Sheinel Yofos Eino Tzricha Bedik. A bride whose eyes are pretty, literally, there's no need to check her out for anything more. What does that mean? She has these gorgeous blue eyes. So that's it? That's real Hollywood. The rabbis couldn't have possibly meant that. That's obviously not true. So the Kli Yakar explains, it refers to someone who has an ayin yofa. The Mishnah Trumas tells us that ayin yofa is you give more than you have to. You don't give the 2% which you're supposed to give to the Kohen. You give above and beyond. You give 2.5%, indicating generosity. Which means a bride who is kind, who demonstrates the midah of chesed, that's the main theme as we've always been taught, she's all right. Why? Because what's marriage all about? What marriage is each party giving on behalf of the other. That's a successful marriage. What's a failed marriage? When each party wants to take from the other. Very simplistic, but there's a lot of truth to that one line. And the reason for so many failed marriages today is that this one line is not being taught properly, is not being assimilated properly. We have to take some of the blame for ourselves and we put some of the blame on the outside world. That's only fair. We've been impacted on by that. However, Rashi also comments in that parasha that Eliezer's gifts to Rivka or a reference to the shkolim, to the shekel HaKodesh, which is used to count the Jewish people. And that's why he gave the shkolim, the beka mishkolo. Now what was the shkolim all about? The shkolim were, you know, when you don't count Jews, you count for a million. Why don't you count Jews? So Rashi that comments, ayin ara. the opposite of Ayin Yof is Ayin Hara. So therefore you count to count with money, so you make the census. Now, this means Ayin Hara, that same phrase, refers to publicly flaunted wealth. This is a halachic concept. The Talmud tells in Baba Basra at the beginning, they have to put up a fence, people shouldn't look in, and they look in, and they'll give you an Ayin Hara. We always say Kenein Hara, right? This is not just voodoo here. There's a lot of statements based upon it, which means that this can have a terrible impact. Rashi quoted it, the luchos are broken to Ayin Hara. This is not just something of the occult. Well, what does it mean? It means as follows. Ayin Hara is related to Ayin Ra. Ayin Ra means stinginess. Instead of giving 2%, you give less than that. What's the connection? It's a psychological one. When I want to prove my superiority to you, whether it be material, numerical, spiritual, I want to show that I'm better than you. Huh? How do I do it? It means I have to put myself up, and by definition, I have to put you down. Because if you're up there with me, I haven't proven anything. It inevitably leads to that kind of a put down. So therefore, the Ayin Hara of someone observing your success, it's like, what does that mean? That means that I look at your grain growing so high and I say, why do you deserve it? He shouldn't get to have so much grain. I'm more saintly than he is. And this has an impact. That's related to the Ayin Ra of a person that he has towards another individual. In other words, you have to be very careful to avoid both the Ayin Hara and the Ayin Ra. And what are the opposites of these two midos? The opposite of Ayin Ra is Chesed, to give more. And the opposite of Ayin Hara, as we just described before, is Tzniut. So one can tell by these same phrase, which usually was the opposite of both of them, that they are in fact related. This is my introduction to the general concept of Tzniut. We haven't spoken too much about men, about women. I should make one remark, and that is that whatever the Torah says, and the rabbis say, is for all time. And if the rabbis tell us at the very beginning of the Torah, of Yeshua, that a woman should not be a yatzanis, she shouldn't be so outward, this means that this is true for all generations, albeit in a different way in each generation. Our rabbis teach us in the Talmud that a man is not permitted to walk in the marketplace, in the street, behind a woman. So the fascinating exchange in the response of one of the Gedolei Hadar, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Shalita, the Mincha Shlomo, number 91, we have a correspondence with another Gadol of Jerusalem, Rav Waldenberg Shalita, and they're writing to each other, I don't know what to do. I go on the street, and mind you, they're living in Jerusalem, not in downtown Manhattan, right? I'm going to the street in Jerusalem, and I try to keep the words of the sages not to go behind the woman, so there's a woman in front of me, so I move to the other side of another woman, the other side of another woman. What am I going to do? And so they write back, I forgot which one wrote to the other, you know, you just can't do this anymore. This is just a principle which counts. Which means that now things have changed. In those days, women didn't go out in the street. So there's one woman in the street, two. So you don't go right behind her, you move to the other side. Today you can't do that anymore. That's exactly the problem we're going to be discussing tonight in greater detail. We don't have the luxury that they had. They had the luxury of just not seeing any women, period. In today's society, it's something which almost nobody can do. Even in Jerusalem, even if you're a great Torah sage. So what then should be done about it? This brings us to the topics which we're supposed to speak about today in particular. The first is directly this. Women and men-women relationships in business. Now, business doesn't mean not limited to business only, but it's a business means in the outside world. I have to tell you that, unfortunately, this is a terrible, terrible plague in the world community, and it's impacted in the Jewish community and even in the Orthodox Jewish community. Going to I was introduced as being a rabbi in the Young Israel of Riverdale, which, in Israel of Riverdale, after all, it's a shul, which everyone is Shabbos, it's one of those shuls, not like the old days, you know, when, the, when all the shuls are nominally Orthodox, there were so many who weren't really observant. I have to tell you that in certain ways, those synagogues were one up on today's synagogues. I was speaking to a rabbi here in Queens who has been a rabbi in a synagogue for 35 years, and it's a very mixed kind of a congregation in the sense that not everyone is so strictly observant. And he told me that in his 35 years, to this point, he's had only one divorce in his synagogue. Now, I have to tell you that, I won't give you any numbers, but I'm a rabbi for about half of that time in my synagogue, and I'm way ahead in a much smaller synagogue, with quote-unquote, fruma people. And they were more devout, they had greater education than the yeshivas. And I think that a large part of the reason is the generation gap, and that the people who have been growing up more recently have been impacted on by, number one, by a more immoral society. That generation made a tremendous difference. And number two, they're closer to the society. 30 years ago, society itself wasn't so bad, and the Jews were more insulated. Say they're less insulated, the society is worse. And in my community, there is a case of an individual who, observant Jew, was even ordained by a particular rabbinical institution, and unfortunately, he had a major spiritual downfall in business, because in the middle of his business, he was fell into his Yetzer Hara. And what happened was, it's not the only case that's happened in the world, but you know, when it happens to someone whom you know, it hurts you more. So there was a secretary, you know, a pretty blonde non-Jewish secretary, and I don't have to belabor the point. The divorce already happened, and the family is broken, and now start picking up the pieces, and it's terrible. Terrible. It's business. Now, we are taught, haroa sota bikulkuli azer atzam enayayin. If you see things which are not proper, you have to try to build fences for yourself, which is the whole concept of the Nazirite, going above and beyond, pulling back from what's even permitted, because if you're afraid of what is permitted, may cross the line, they go overboard. We have to be so careful in our lives about our daily conduct. And we are taught by the rabbis that when it comes to arayos, to illicit relationships, we have to be very, very careful. The expression which is used by the Shulchan Aruch is ma'od, ma'od. That's how it starts. So this rachak min arayos, ma'od, ma'od. Very, very much. It's an expression which is not used. I think it's used only one more place. A different context which is not for this series. And it's a very big problem. In the outside world, we know what goes on. You know, whatever happens, happens, and everything is forgiven and forgotten. Just go on your merry way. We can't live that way. Impossible. So therefore, the most important warning to be given for anyone who's out in the outside world, the business world, is to be very, very careful. Which means you're going to be called a prude. You can't be, you know, palsy-wowsy with everybody and go out to drink in the bar as they do either at lunchtime or after hours. And then, okay, after you'll drink, and then you'll say, okay, now I'm going home to my family. This doesn't work. It just doesn't work. The line has to be drawn much earlier than that. Say, listen, I'm working in this office, I make my living here, I make an honest living, I'll be friendly with everybody, I'll say hello and goodbye, be polite. But that's it. Men-women relationships cannot be conducted in the same cavalier fashion to someone who was an observant Jew. This may sound like a harsh line, you know. Here I'm telling grown adults, people that seem to be, well-adjusted and happily married, and I'm putting up all kinds of restrictions. Don't blame me. We have this in the rabbis, in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Rambam. But do you well advised to know that it's not just a matter of, well, I take it on blind faith. The Rambam tells me that I have to do it, I have to do it. Don't take it on blind faith. Look around you. Take my word for that it happened. The guy wasn't very, very careful, then he wasn't careful. Then he wasn't very careful, then he wasn't careful, and then the rest. This is as far as the pitfalls which exist in the business world, and they are pitfalls. I don't think anyone should be naive to close his eyes to them. Forgive me, by the way, for speaking only in the male. That's how I'm speaking, just because of my gender. But the same thing exists for women in the business world. As we mentioned earlier, now women are out in the business world almost as much as men, and they have the same problem the other way. Same thing. Oh, man starts getting friendly with the woman, you know, I'll take out for a drink. One more story, which will, that was a shul story, and I'll tell you a yeshiva story, you know, just to keep the balance, you know. I was sitting in the yeshiva, in the Beis Medrash one day, a couple of years ago, and I got an emergency call on the payphone, a little payphone outside the Beis Medrash, you know, on the third floor. It's a rabbi whom I know on the phone, emergency! What happened? Just got a call from an anonymous call from a woman whose husband is a rabbi. Husband is a rabbi, and she's a businesswoman.
No.
Businesswoman. So she was at a business convention in, you want to guess the town? Las Vegas. I'm going to throw the story if it was before. Maybe not. Las Vegas. You got it. That's a Mokka Matuma. So what happens? Well, again, it's all according to the description of the lady to the rabbi and the rabbi to me, because it was a halachic question. You can already see what's going on. A halachic question does not mean that she was playing shuffleboard. What happened was, she described it, she was sitting at the whole hard day in negotiation and business. So her first cardinal mistake was, she had to unwind, right? So she's gone to sleep, she had to unwind, she went down to the bar. The lobby. What's a lobby in Las Vegas? I've never been there, but from what I understand, a lobby is not, you know, like in the Homowack, you know. So there's a bar. So she figured, look, she'll have a drink. She has one drink. Now, of course, we know that a drink loosens your inhibitions. She's sitting there already having had a drink, and some guy walks over to her and says, can I offer you another drink? She makes the cardinal sin of saying, look, a freebie, you know, we're going to get her for a freebie. So, okay. And then he says, okay, I'll walk you up to your room. And then, the corner of the story, so he walks to the room, and they go into the room, and then there's a question in halacha, she's allowed to stay with her husband, the rabbi. So care is required on both ends. And I'm not telling you anything which I didn't know, which I wasn't involved in directly, in terms of questions coming to me about these particular incidents. One party I know well, and one party just anonymous. One man and one woman of the Jewish faith. And just, my first question, which had some halachic import, I says, wasn't she worried about AIDS? You know what the answer was? I asked. So you know what she answered? I asked him if he had it, he said no. Just to give you an idea of Nuchas Baruch Shtus, you know, it's just, yeah. Anyway, we have to be very careful now in our business lives, because anything can happen. We have to be very careful. What about dating? Let's talk about the positive, you know, dating is for singles who want to get married and establish a loyal and true Jewish home. What happens there? Well, we know it goes on in dates in the outside world. You just listen to read the contemporary media, you know right away what goes on in dates, you know, what the next word after that is. So it's a question of whether it's willing or unwilling, but that's what the date is all about. Whereas we believe that in a date, or in any other context, a man and a woman who are not married to one another may have no physical contact with each other whatsoever. Zero. That's what's called Eino Shel Chiba. Moshe Feinstein said, that's a famous tshuva about going on the subways. How can you go in Russia on the subways, get bumped around? He said, that's okay. that's all right. But in a social context, in one of a romantic context, affectionate context, is absolutely prohibited. And there's a question of what level of prohibition it is. According to the Maimonides, it's a Torah prohibition. Very serious. So what's the date all about? What's the date? Well, the date is a time when a man and a woman are supposed to get to know each other. What do they look for? Well, we spoke earlier what to look for. Look for chesed, look for tznius, look for compatibility, look for idealism. We know what two things you have to look for. How do you find out? You just have to use your head. You know, and not marry for ulterior motives. That's what we're told. The Mishnah at the end of Tanis tells us that we're supposed to marry for pure motives. We're not supposed to marry for money. That's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. We're not supposed to marry for beauty. We're supposed to marry because the other party is a proper individual, ideally from a proper family, with proper values, and that you can build a life together. And it's a life of commitment. It's a life of wanting to help one another. What is marriage? Marriage is, as our sages have taught us, an ongoing opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of chesed. That's what it is. We think sometimes that chesed is, you know, you join and the rabbi makes an announcement, there's a Bika Cholim committee, and there's a Chevra Kadisha, and that's definitely chesed, and I think you should listen to the rabbi when he makes this announcement. But I found sometimes a remarkable thing. There are individuals who are active in the community, they're presidents of their organizations, and they try to help, you know, to organize, to raise funds, you know. But behind closed doors, it's a different story. To a wife, it can be terribly abusive. How is it possible? The same person is so kind outside. The answer is that outside is being watched. And even this kindness is because, you know, you get brownie points for it. You know, you get a plaque, or you get looked at properly. But behind closed doors, you can get away with it. No one's looking. Terrible. That's terrible. And, unfortunately, not one on my list. Another such situation where no longer married. Because that's exactly what happened. We believe exactly the opposite is true. That the true measure of a person's kindness is when no one is looking. And that the entire marriage relationship is, in effect, an opportunity to practice this day in and day out. From every good morning to every good evening, from the most public to the most private. And the marriage relationships have to be done by each spouse for the sake of the other. Mechab de yosem ikufo, our rabbis teach us. And in the dating process, the person is supposed to look at the other one and say, hey, is this person on that kind of a level? Or is this person only interested in his or her own gratification? I have an interesting book, which is a pretty current book, which I recommend highly. Called Doesn't Anyone Blush Anymore? It's written by Rabbi Manus Friedman, who was related to the Lubavitch movement in Minneapolis, or St. Paul, I believe, or somewhere in Minnesota. And it came out in 1990. It's a very recent work. And I think it's very, very good insights. One of them is, what does it mean to go out of a marriage? He gives a very interesting example. You know, going out of a marriage doesn't just mean if someone, God forbid, is adulterous. Going out of a marriage can mean you, for a moment, you side with someone against your spouse. I'll give an example. That a couple is checking out in a grocery store, and they have a certain amount of money, and the husband pulls out a wallet, and change starts to fall out, and it takes them a while, and people are online. So the woman says to the cashier, which she never met in her whole life, mind you, well, you know, my husband sometimes is a bungler when he doesn't handle things properly. So, you know, she's trying to sort of cover up, you know, but he writes with some measure of correctness that she's gone out of the marriage. She's now starting with the cashier, which she doesn't know, against the husband of 25 years. Now, it's maybe an insignificant incident. I've seen circumstances which frighten me. You have a couple sitting around the room, And sometimes they're engaged in these, what these call these put-downs, which are terrible in general. I can't stand this kind of talk. But what's worse is that in this context, sometimes find that he's putting down her and man, and you think that these husbands might be on the same team. No, not necessarily. They're putting down one another. And that's really terrible. Terrible. That's just the opposite of what marriage is all about. You have to protect. As I tell the couples whom I meet with who are about to be married, once you're married, your spouse is always right. No matter any criticism that comes leveled against the spouse has to be deflected. What do you think? Doesn't matter what you think. And people in my community know that they can afford it. My shul, they know they can attack the rabbi and get away with it. But if they try anything about the rabbison, they're in the doghouse. That's it, forget about it. That's it. I'm serious, I'm not kidding, it's not a joke. The rabbi does this wrong, that wrong. We all make mistakes. But that one bad word, and they find a totally different reaction. You know, they say about you, because rabbi, is this a measure of something said about the Rebbetzin? No. That's, you have to be defend, no matter what. It has to be reciprocal. It has to be both ways. That's what Jewish marriage is all about. That's what dating is about. Dating is just the beginning of the marriage process. To see if that party and you can live this kind of a life together. If you think you can, go for it. If you can't, break it off. It's very important. It's critical. Now, this is not the time to go into the details. How many dates? You got this many dates, that many dates. Huh? But one thing is clear, that dating is definitely goal-oriented. If I must use the word which has no really perfect translation, what is it? That's right. Tachlis. Tachlis. That's what we believe in. Dating for the sake of tachlis. As opposed to the trivial teenage dating. When they were 17-year-olds, and that was, when they had to assert themselves socially, so they would all tell you, yeah, but Rebbe, if I don't go out, when I know I'm going out, it's 14, 15, 16, I know it's nothing, but I got to train myself. Because, I see these boys in the yeshivish boys, they don't know what to do, and then they go out on dates, and they're a bunch of klutzes, they don't know how to handle themselves, My response always was to them, listen, if you're a klutz, then remain a klutz, and it's not going to help you to practice in your teen years. And if you know what you're doing, so without any practice, you'll figure out how to handle the situation. We just can't practice for. I'm very much against dating when it's not for topless. For many reasons. Boys and girls, in their formative years, we don't encourage them to socialize in this kind of a manner. We don't. It's halakhically unhealthy, and it's psychologically unhealthy. After you're talking about what's the boy going to do all day? What's the girl going to do all day? She's not going to be hanging out with the members of the opposite sex the way it's done in the street. Well, the answer is you find something to do. The boy has to look around. You see all his books around you? He has to go master them. And then come back to me. He'll be old enough to be a grandfather if you wait for that long. But, we believe that women have an obligation of Torah study on many levels as well. There's so much they have to learn and to do. And it's chesed that we spoke about earlier. It's family relationships to be developed. This is schoolwork, other work. There's plenty to keep you busy. Now, there is a halacha as well, which the Rambam quotes, that men are not supposed to stare at women. Standing on the corner watching all the girls go by, I think it's an American pastime. I think more popular than baseball. But it's not allowed. The halacha is simply not allowed. It's a violation. You may ask, then how do you go on a date? Right, so how do you look at the young lady? So in certain circles, they just stop dating, basically. They just arranged it all, and they met at the wedding, but not recommending that. That's a thing of the past. The answer is that the Rambam himself says that when a person is interested in marriage, not only is he permitted to look upon the young lady, he's required to do so, to make sure that she's pleasing to his eye. Because if not, he's not allowed to marry her. So the rabbi suspended this prohibition because it's only prohibited when it's for naught.
When it's for tachlis, then it's permissible and even required. In this context, in both contexts, both the business context and the dating context, there exists a particular problem, which is on my list of topics for this evening, which is known as yichud. Yichud. What is yichud? The yichud means that a man and a woman are in a closed, locked, secluded area. They'll say, well, what's so terrible about that? This book, which, as I said before, is a very interesting insights into it, has a remarkable expression. Remarkable expression. I'll just read you one line. A man and a woman alone together is a sexual event, even if nothing else happens. He's speaking to the general community, that's why he's using these expressions. But it's a very interesting expression. Very interesting. We don't believe that a person should try to change his basic nature, implanted into him from the beginning of time, and described in Bereshit in last week's parsha, by saying, "Well, I'm just going to turn off and break my nature." No, we recognize human nature. We recognize the Yetzer Hara for what it is. The famous story, which is told about Rabbi Elia Lapian, who was known as one of the great Musar teachers, but many years ago when things were somewhat different in the Shiva community, he launched into a diatribe excoriating individuals who participate in mixed bathing. And after all, the man is on the beach and the women are dressed in bathing suits and is exposed. And it affects the person, the Bachi Yeshiva, to be so affected. It's going to ruin all of his learning and all of his Yerushalayim, and it's going to cause the evil thoughts enter his mind, etc. The story is told that after one of these lectures, an individual student went over to Rabbi Elia and said, "Rabbi, I don't understand. I've gone with my family on numerous occasions to the Tel Aviv, to the beach, and it has absolutely no impact on me. It doesn't affect me one bit." So Rabbi Elia is said to have pounded the table and screamed, quick, fetch a doctor, this boy is sick. Which means that the Musar giants are not oblivious to proper human drives. They exist. And to claim they don't exist is either to admit sickness. But we have to know to avoid situations which would lead to halachic problems. And yichud is one of these situations. The Rambam calls it hagoreim hagodol. That's the greatest cause of immorality is yichud. If you're not together, you can't get to the next step. And there are numerous halachic details concerning yichud. One man and one woman, one man and two women, two men and one woman. The distinctions that are drawn, as told, there's even a TV program about this kind of a relationship. What, three or something? But I don't know what it's called. But it happened when I was living in Washington Heights and as a newlywed near the yeshiva. It was one of these Vietnam-era individuals who somehow was enrolled to the yeshiva, got out of the draft, and it was with two women in the apartment. I mean, so, this is something which not just, TV copies life, is where they get it from. So the rabbi's even afraid about a man and two women. They say, wait, crazy? Not so crazy. You have to know that there are certain restrictions which exist within certain relatives. And the primary original yichud was relatives. Some relatives are okay, some are not okay. Close relatives, blood relatives, not blood relatives. You have to be very careful. And there's a whole long Simon Chav Beis in the Shulchan Aruch, which if time would allow, we could spend a few hours on. It really goes to many, many details concerning this. I would recommend that if you have any question about this, you consult the Rav. Because these are very serious halachic questions, like anything else. Yichud is an intrinsic aveira. It means it's intrinsically wrong. Not only is it going to lead to something else, it's intrinsically wrong. The same as we mentioned earlier about physical contact between men and women, affectionate contact. Not only is it going to lead to something else, maybe, but it's intrinsically wrong. It's intrinsically wrong. The Torah prohibits it even if nothing else happens. The same thing is true of the idea of yichud. And it's true of yichud in the business world, in the yichud in the dating world, in any world. Any world. And if you risk being called a prude, Well, you're not going to go into this locked room? Are you crazy? Don't you trust me? Don't you know me? You know? I say, I'm sorry. Blame it on the rabbi. My rabbi said I can't do it. I always tell my students, I can just blame it on me. This is something very important. It's an area of halacha which we sometimes take lightly because we trust ourselves too much. Whereas our rabbis taught us, al tamin b'yatzmecha, don't trust yourself. And in these areas, it's especially important not to trust yourself because the Torah is very strong. And so we have, in our introductory opening lecture, discussed some very important matters. And I will conclude in a few moments. I'll be very happy to take any questions you may have. And we will be discussing, I guess, coming attractions for the next upcoming shiur, which will be a little more particular. We've discussed the idea of tzniyus, of modesty and of privacy, and the relationship between those two concepts, and their joint relationships to the idea of Torah scholarship. And we've discussed the concept of the ayin hara, ayin ra, being the opposite. We've discussed the idea of the luchos being destroyed when they're given with too much fanfare, mentioning the fact that modesty is not limited to women, and not limited to Jews, applied to all mankind, but to Jews more than non-Jews, and to women more than men. Every context of every generation being somewhat different, but that remains a constant. It should not be considered a pejorative. It refers to our master Moses. And we've discussed the importance of applying humility in our hearts to modesty in our deeds. We discussed this general introductory idea and tried to apply it to the official topics for today. Man, women, and sneers was the general overview. We spoke the first half this evening. In the second half, we tried to speak about the particular of this evening's topic as it was given, which is discussing the business world. We would explain by vivid examples how an individual, even of the Orthodox persuasion, can fall in and into an unholy relationship. We have to be so careful not to trust ourselves in this area. And we pointed out that because of the greater affluence in our society, even the Orthodox society, and the greater decadence in the outside world, these dangers are much greater now than they were a generation ago. Witness, among other things, the progressively growing divorce rate, even in our community. We mentioned the importance of dating when it's proper and avoiding dating when it's improper. What to look for, what to avoid, what not to look for, what to be motivated purely and not by ulterior motives. We discussed at the end the idea of yichud, which is a very important law, which has many details, which we don't have time to discuss now. But let it be on your minds. Remember, ma'od, ma'od, be very, very careful in these areas. To conclude with the words of our sages, quoted by Rashi, kedoshim to you, should be holy. Rashi says, whenever you find the concept of holiness, of sanctity, there you find gedurim in our eyes. You find that they are careful in these matters. And we think of kiddush in the most lofty terms. I'm going to be holy. We think that holiness is related to all kinds of different things. We would never describe holiness in men, women. No, holiness is, you know, philosophy. This kind of preaching noble ideals. That's all true. But it has to have a basis. And the basis has to be chastity. Has to be modesty. And we speak about the Jewish marriage as kiddushin, as holiness. Jewish marriage is about holiness. The Jewish life is about holiness. Ki am kodesh ata. We are a holy nation. Kadosh to you. We are commanded to be holy. And I hope that the discussion we have this evening together will enable us as we begin this series and as we begin reading about the history of the world, going back to creation, Vayikadesh also. God made introduce holiness into the world. Holiness means you can stop. You cannot work on the Sabbath and you cannot do a particular action which we discussed this evening. The same idea. Holiness means boundaries. Saying no. I hope that all of us will be inspired by these ideas to attempt to reach higher levels of holiness, of Kedusha. And I anticipate that in the upcoming Shiurim, we'll try to give greater insights as to how this Kedusha can be achieved. Thank you for listening. I guess I'll take questions, yeah?
You quoted the Pasuk.
Please give the same courtesy you gave, which I appreciate, to the questioners as well.
You quoted the Pasuk in Vayera, Hinei Bo'el, saying that Sarah Tzniuah
Right.
You quoted the Pasuk, Yosheva Olam, and Toldos, to show the study of Toldos, and show the relationship.
Right.
There's a Pasuk in Laskanen, Right. Some of our rabbis interpret that as meaning sexual relationship. So how could they use a pasuk there for sexual relationship when otherwise it's used for smears and Torah?
Good. Okay, a very good question. Excellent question. I think the answer is readily apparent. This kind of relationships, which we don't deny these relationships exist. We don't put them under the rug. We know they exist. But it's only bi'alecha. You know, in the outside world, you see how a couple stride in the avenue. You go to Manhattan one day, and you see they're all, they're grabbing onto each other. You know, they're holding on, and they're trying to show their affection in as public a manner as possible. You can't drive in the streets. It's dangerous. Right? You drive in the streets, and there's this guy, his wine on the wheel, and there's his girlfriend next to him, and I would make a right turn and try to go up a different block. It's hard to concentrate, on two things at once. But in the outside world, there's nothing wrong with showing this kind of affection publicly. Every society has different ways of showing things, but the common denominator is that this public displays of affection exist. Whereas in Jewish tradition, we do not display this kind of affection between husband and wife in a public manner. And Shulchan Aruch is even quoted, not permitted. It's based on certain verses and certain other sources, and Shulchan Aruch tells us, and produced in Siman Chaf Hey, that a wife and husband should not display their affection publicly. Now, in our society, it's often a dangerous sign. I'll give you another case of my checkered past in my synagogue. Back to the very beginning, when I was many years ago, there was one couple. Every time they'd walk out after shul, everyone would walk out. A couple, sometimes holds hands on the way home from shul. It's like, but they were all over each other. All over. I said, there's something. And I was much younger then, and I said, but there's something wrong. I can't. Well, that's another one of my statistics. That marriage didn't last very long. Often it's just to show, we believe that these things are kept in total privacy. It's nius in the ultimate sense. Very careful. Women go to mikveh. No one's supposed to know about this. It's again quoted in Shulchan Aruch. She went this night, she went that night, she's that. There are very many traditions in our society are made to protect that tznius in the relationship between husband and wife, in the intimate relationship. And that's why the Torah is exactly the same expression, ohel, which indicates privacy, clothes, no one knows in describing that part of the Jewish marriage life, which is also Kedusha. The Ramban, in his famous masterpiece about this, is called Igeres HaKodesh. That's what it's called. It's not called something which is lowly or animal-like. On the contrary, which is elevated to the highest level of sanctity, but only if it's done by all, and it's with an absolute sense of privacy. Yes?
What is the halacha on a mixed feeling because I see that being a mixed
up. Mr. Chairman, is that on my agenda for the upcoming? I don't remember exactly what the.
Well, you
can cover it. I will also do on the next subtopic to include it, because I think now is not the time. No, I was told to speak for an hour. I can speak for 3 hours, mind you. But the chairman told me that we speak for...
The third shiur, one of the topics was mechitza during tefillah.
So let's include that.
Mechitza during lectures.
So if we can wait a couple... But please put it into the thing. I shouldn't forget. It wouldn't be right. I should say the awful conversation is not a uniquely attributed to mixed company. I would say that often it's worse when. That's terrible in any company. But let's hold off on that, if you will. So, yes, ma'am.
How does the idea of Yisro apply to that patient?
That's a very good question. Doctor-patient relationships. There are even state laws about that. I want you to know in certain. Areas of medicine has to be someone else in the room or someone else in the office, because the state has been burned plenty with these kind of cases as well. Usually, in a doctor's office, there has to be someone else there who has access. A nurse can go in and out, the doctor go in and out. That would avoid the problem. But if there would not be that other party, then it would be a serious issue of yichud. And if an individual would have to go to a doctor under those circumstances, there's no one else to meet me in my office on a Sunday. There's no one else there. I would tell a woman to take a husband with her or something like that, or vice versa, just to make sure that this problem shouldn't be encountered. Yes, ma'am.
Do you think that you mentioned that when you were close to dating, just for the sake of going out.
Right.
How do you feel about boys and girls socializing in groups?
That's a good question. Generally speaking, I feel that socializing in groups, while not as problematic as one-on-one, also is problematic. And now I'm fully aware of the fact that there are a number of youth movements that are co-educational and have supposedly a redeeming value in terms of inculcating certain ideals to their members, whether it be Zionism, whether it be the Teshuvah, whether it be whatever it may be. And this is a very difficult call, because it's a good against the bad. And in certain circumstances, such as those described by the sainted Rabbi Weinberg in France in the post-war period, the rabbis encouraged these groups because the alternative was similar activities with non-Jewish young men and women. So in a way, it's to pick the lesser of the evils. But in the absolute sense, I'm opposed to that too. If not for some other consideration, I would be opposed to that as well. Yes?
I'm wondering if in your next lecture you're going to talk about dress, attire.
Is that on the... It's on the list. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Back to the question of yichud in the business world. If a man and woman, because of their business relationship, have to be in the same room, and in connection with the halacha, if one keeps the door open to the public,
if the door is open to the public, then it's not called yichud. No problem. Yes, ma'am. Well, the fact that you deal with cash deals does not obviate the problem of yichud. You have to make sure there are enough people in the office.
Well,
is it locked? Is it closed? I mean, can people walk in? I mean, do some people? No, not. I didn't ask, can people walk in? I said, do people walk in? In other words, does it ever happen that a person would walk in? Then it's okay. If it would never happen that a person would walk in, then it's in effect locked by protocol. So that's a problem. All right, I want to thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I just want that clarification. Like you said, you're opposed to men and women. What about, like you read the Jewish press, Shabbatons taking place?
Oh, wait a minute. Slowly. At what age are we discussing? I have a young man in my shul. That's how it's a good news, finally. As a man well into his 30s. And he just got engaged last week. I said, where'd you meet him? At a Shabbaton in West Hempstead. And it's great. I said, we should never think like the Shabbaton. That's a tremendous mitzvah. But that's at an age when it will be called tachlis. And they're not just hopefully looking for that on a serious basis. The previous question was someone that was 15. You know, that's a different story. Okay. Thank you very much. Can we get
in
from Ira?
Yes, we'll get in from Ira right now.